As he spoke, a group of men and women in the costume of about 1770 passed us. They stared curiously at our little party, but said nothing. J. W., how is it that they have not passed to the spirit plane? HJL, probably because they have never attempted to progress, and on the other hand, have never obsessed, and so have not been pushed down below. It is a curious fact, which I have not yet completely fathomed, that while most astrals remain on this plane for only so long, roughly as they might have lived on Earth, in each generation there are a few exceptions, and these seem to hang about for an indefinite period. There are men here who came from the Great Ice Age. Of course, they are but a very small percentage of the vast hordes which have passed through these regions, but even 1% would make a considerable number here when you remember that a man died every minute. Some men remain earthbound for centuries, and continue to haunt their former homes on Earth, but every ghost who haunts the moated grange is not a real astral being. Often it is but the empty shell which still hangs round its old haunts, although the spirit has departed long since. We continued on our journey, and soon entered the Jacobean period, and passed a fine old manor house in its own grounds. Here we noticed several men and women in the costume of 1630 walking along the avenues. And so we passed from one period of history to another, till we entered the classic period. H. J. L., who had commented on the various eras through which we had passed, remarked of this one, "Of course, we are still in England, as you might say, and therefore do not see the Roman period at its finest. Britain was always rather a distant province of the empire, and retained much of its pre-Roman characteristics. The Romans proper regarded it somewhat as a place of exile to be left as soon as their term of service was completed. Still, the temple is quite a fine one." So saying, he pointed to a temple, the portico of which could be seen among the trees on the right. Just at that moment a man in a Roman toga stopped full in front of us, and spoke, "Whence come you, strangers, and whither going?" I presume he spoke in Latin, but we understood him perfectly. He was the first denizen of the past who had spoken to us. HJL replied, "We come from the 20th century, from the battlefields of Gaul, and are taking this young soldier to a place of utter silence, that he may rest. But who are you?" The stranger: "I am Claudius, a centurion of the 10th Legion." "Is there then fighting in Gaul? Have the Gauls risen again, or is it an incursion of the Germans?" HJL: "The Germans have invaded Gaul, and the men of Britain, of Gaul, and of Italy are holding them back with a wall of steel." The stranger: "Good. And who is now Emperor of Rome?" "It is long since I had news of Earth, HJL. There is no Emperor of Rome today." The stranger: "Mock me not. Because I have left the world these many years, it ill becomes you to mock at my ignorance. Who is Emperor of Rome?" HJL: "I speak the truth. There has been no Emperor of Rome for over 100 years, and even he who was called Emperor of Rome before that time for many hundreds of years had been a German and had no real power. No, not even in Rome itself. For he reigned on the Danube." The stranger: "By the gods. You amaze me. The last emperors, Germans, and today no emperor at all." "Sir, if truth you speak, and I see now you do speak the truth, then mark my words. It was prophesied that when Rome fell the world would fall. If then, there is no Emperor of Rome, then the days of the world are numbered. But who reigns at Rome?" HJL: "There is a king of Italy, and of course, the Pope ruled in Rome, and although he no longer rules it, he still dwells there, and is a most important personage." The stranger: "Sir, I thank you for your news. Much is strange to me, but, indeed, men who entered these regions long after I died have spoken of a Pope, but this is the first time I have heard there was no Emperor. But of this war, how goes it?" HJL: "A fierce and bitter war, in which the Germans have wasted many cities and killed many people, both men and women and little children, without mercy and contrary to all the laws of war." The stranger: "The Germans were ever a cruel and treacherous race. False of heart are they, and, when beaten, will swear to a treaty, and next summer break it. May the gods smite them down. farewell. So saying, he turned up the road which led to the temple, and we continued our journey. But ever on we went, and soon all civilization was left behind. The country became a series of tangled forests with here and there villages of huts, in which we noticed men and women clad in skins. Rex, who till now had remained very silent, suddenly said, "This is the era of the Britons, I suppose, and thence we shall pass to the Neolithic Age. This journey is quite interesting. I am learning more real history in thus one journey than I ever learnt from books on earth. But now I, J. W., began to feel tired and knew that the earth was calling me, so at length I stopped in a glade in the forest and spoke, J. W. I must return, where shall I find you next time? H.J.L. You wilt find us if you simply concentrate your mind on us. As a matter of fact, we shall be in the land of utter silence." So I said goodbye, and turned back into the jungle. But I was hardly alone when it began to shiver and grow misty. Soon I could see nothing but clouds, and then lost consciousness. J.W. Chapter 4, The Utter Silence. May 9th, 1916. I went out seeking R.L.W. and found him without any difficulty. He was seated in a bare, rocky valley, in which there was no sign of vegetation. All around the earth was a barren waste, broken into hummocks, and with here and there sheer cliffs rising from sand or gravel, and overhead the sky seemed overcast and misty. Was seated near him, and rose to greet me. But R.L.W. hardly moved. W. How are you feeling now, Rex? I am glad you have come, but I am feeling very miserable. W. Why? I can't get away from the memory of my past misdeeds. W. So you are seeing the visions of your past life, I suppose? H.J.L. Not exactly. It is more akin to earthly memory. Here they are not pure spirits, and therefore do not as a rule see the forms of their thoughts as we do in the spirit plane. But the memory is strung up to a far higher pitch than it is on earth, and so their past lives pass once more through the brain till it becomes almost overpowered by the mass of details which it has accumulated. Poor boy! He is having rather a bad time, but it will pass soon, L. Hope. R.L.W. The worst of it is, I seem to remember my misdeeds almost to the exclusion of my good ones. I'm sure I did more good deeds than I can remember, but every fault seems to stand out with startling vividness. What is more, some of them seem to appear before my eyes, not all I admit, but the worst often do. H.J.L. patted his arm. It will pass, Rex, it will pass. I have been through it all. Don't forget the Bible's words, though your sins be as scarlet, etc. And, after all, you have not lived long enough to pile up a very heavy weight of sin. Fancy what you would have had to face if you had lived to my age. R.L.W. Then thank God I didn't, but I might have got better as years went on. H.J.L. You might, or you might not. God only knows. But, anyway, it is ended. Here, if you stick to me, and follow my advice, you need sin no more. Soon this stage will pass. We relapsed into silence, till at length I spoke. J. W. There is, then, a marked difference in this matter also between your plane and the astral? Yes, memory plays its little part here, but not so vividly as on the next plane, where we see in very truth our past life. W. When a soul passes from the astral to the spirit plane, will it once more go through this stage? To a slight extent, but remember it will see also its life on the astral plane, and if that life has been a good one, it will more than counterbalance the evil that it sees which belonged to its life on earth. A. Did not pass through this stage on the astral plane, and so felt it acutely on the spirit plane. Indeed, even now he feels it at times. But you must remember he was not long on the astral plane, whereas Rex will settle down to a lengthy stay here, at least so I expect. Again silence fell on us, and I felt that it was almost painful. It seemed to eat into my brain. R.L.W. suddenly spoke. Yes, it affects me in the same way, but I think it is doing me good. Then he relapsed into silence. I made a movement to return after a while, and he spoke again. How are father and mother? J. W. Well, I am glad to say, at least so far as mother can ever be said to be well, and C. And little B. Does she still remember me? Yes, I know she does. She is a dear little child. Then he relapsed into silence once more, and I turned and left him with a cheery goodbye. J.W. Yes, both are well. B often speaks of you. She was very unhappy when she heard you were killed. She always remembers you in her prayers. H.J.L. followed me, and said, I will go a short way with you. Rex will be all right by himself for a short time. As we walked along, he said, this is just the worst period. But already I can see an improvement beginning. His mind is becoming clearer, growing attuned to the new conditions. J. W. Well, I must hurry back now. Goodbye. So, concentrating my mind on returning to Earth, I seemed caught up in a whirlwind, and the landscape vanished. Soon L lost consciousness. Chapter 5, H.J.L. describes the rest of the journey. May 13, 1916. Again I found H.J.L. and R.W.L. in the same spot as that on which I had left them on my last visit. R.L.W. was evidently much happier now, and greeted me with pleasure. I am much better now. Uncle's treatment is doing me a lot of good. W. How are the memories now? Not so bad. A great peace has entered in, and though every now and then they break out again, each spell seems shorter than the last. I can't undo what I have done, but I can stop now, and shall stop. How goes the war? I told him briefly the news, and then H.J.L. spoke. Rex is certainly much better, but we shall stay here a little longer. By the next time you come here he will be ready to return. J.W. After leaving the ancient British area, did any other adventure befall you? H.J.L. When we entered the Neolithic Age and passed through without any trouble, but while passing through the Paleolithic Age an attack was made on us by a group of savages. We drove them off simply by our willpower. Rex said he wished he had a revolver, so I told him to imagine he was firing one. There was a noise like a sharp report, and one of the savages fell down. The rest bolted. The wounded man made a great fuss, but we went on and left him where he was, and when we had gone a short distance we saw him get up and slink off. Then we came to a region of subtropical vegetation. Here we saw many strange animals, and once or twice creatures which seemed to be half human and half ape. L supposed they were primitive men, but they were evidently very nervous, and kept out of our way. For the most part they seemed to move among the trees. Gradually we worked through this age, and so through all the various geological ages. We saw some strange monsters in the Carboniferous Age. Lots of pterodactyls, some of which attacked us, but we simply willed that they should stop, and they did. Some of the earlier animals were very strange indeed, particularly some of the creatures which lived in a huge marsh. We had considerable difficulty in getting over this. Of course, I could have managed all right. Will is stronger than astral matter, you know, and I would have walked straight over the slime, but Rex had not enough faith and began to flounder. Moreover, he began to get very nervous at the sight of the strange saurians we saw. Somehow we managed to find a track across which we ventured to go, and ultimately found ourselves on the edge of a vast sea. This sea swarmed with strange monsters, the whole place seemed alive with them. Ichthyosaurus, and the old sea serpent even turned up once. He was being closely pursued by some fierce denizen of the sea. Any number of queer shellfish were on the beach and rocks which jutted into the sea, and the beach was strewn with empty shells. Many of these vanished into dust as soon as we touched them. Evidently they were worn-out shells in the occult sense. We did not know how to get across the sea. Of course there were no boats, and I did not know what to do. So we worked round to the left for a long time, till at length we came to the mouth of a huge river. Still we could not get across. We went along the bank of the river for a long way, till finally I came across the log of a tree which was floating in the water. We got on this and paddled the blessed thing across the river, and after a considerable time were caught in a current which carried us across to a strip of land. We grounded some way out, and had to wade. We felt drenched when we got ashore, but we soon seemed to dry up and continued our journey. But time is getting short. We were on a hack of land which had but little vegetation, mostly moss and lichen, and the only animals we saw were some curious creatures rather like frogs. I dare say there were other beasts somewhere, but we did not see them. There were no flowers, and we saw no flying creatures. The land became more and more desolate, till at length, after passing through several tracts of country, we came to this land. Here I can trace no sign of life beyond an occasional worm. There are no signs of vegetation, not even moss, no insects, no fish even, so far as I can see. Here the silence is profound and eternal. Now, that gives you a brief summary of our journey. I have left out sundry unimportant details. J. W. Did you see the hairy mammoth? H. J. L. Yes, plenty of them. In herds crossing a frozen marsh, and also some of the earlier members of the elephant family. We saw a herd of jolly little horses being pursued by Paleolithic men. They did not seem to catch any of them, however. By Jove, those horses went a fearful pace. W. You have not seen anything of the officer? H. J. L. No, you see, I have never left Rex. So, after a little more conversation on private matters, I left them. I did not attempt to pass through the different ages, and so willed that I should return direct, but even as I was doing so and the darkness was enfolding me, a remembrance of the battlefield floated into my mind. This evidently diverted my course, for I found myself among a mass of warring spirits and heard the roar of the guns. A khaki-clad soldier seized my arm and said, "Where are we?" J. W. On the astral plane. The soldier. And where the blazes is that J. W., the place where the dead go first of all. The soldier. Then are we all dead? J. W. Most of you. I am not, but you are dead, the soldier. Good God. Before I could detain him he sprang away and vanished amid the throng. But by now I could feel the earth pull growing stronger, and again, concentrating my mind on my body, found mice if next moment in my room. Saw my body waiting for me, and lost consciousness. J.W. Transvision, May 16, 1916. I again found H.J.L. and R.L.W. in the barren land, and after we had greeted each other, I said, "How are you now, Rex?" R.L.W. much calmer, and no longer miserable. I have had rather a rotten time, but feel ever so much better now. My mind is quite clear, and the haunting memories no longer trouble me. I don't mean that I have forgotten them, but they have sorted themselves out into an ordered sequence, and among them I remember the decent things I did, and these counterbalance memories which would otherwise depress me. Unki is now explaining fully the life on the astral plane, and, incidentally, rubbing in the danger of obsession. He has given me such a harrowing narrative of its evil effects that you may be sure I shall keep clear of that sort of thing. H.J.L. smiled and said, "I thought we should be ready to return to the astral world of today when you came this time, but I think we had better defer it till your next visit. If you don't mind, L will proceed with what I was telling Rex just now." So I sat down and listened while H.J.L. described the various laws of the astral world, and the purpose of life on that plane. At length I rose to go. And after replying to the questions which H.J.L. and R.L.W. put to me about friends still on the Earth, and about the war, I left them and returned to Earth. J.W. Chapter 6, The Return Journey. May 26, 1916. I saw my body lying fast asleep, and then was whirled away into space. Amid the welts of clouds a new landscape grew into being. Barren hills, stony valleys, here and there a bare precipice. At length I found Rex and H.J.L.R.L.W. jumped up, delighted to see me, and said, "I was just beginning to wonder when you would arrive." H.J.L. then spoke. "Rex is at length ready to start on the return journey, but we thought we would wait till you came before we set out." I agreed, and at once we started. After a while, the hill country gave way to a more level stretch. Here were swamps and morasses filled with strange trees, and H.J.L. said, "These are the astral forms of the coal measure trees. Here we shall probably see some of the monsters that formerly inhabited the earth." Even as he spoke, I heard a splashing and gurgling sound, and out of the slime rose a huge beast. It somewhat resembled a crocodile, though not exactly, but hardly had I noticed it when it vanished again beneath the slime. Then a small creature, shaped like a lizard, but with bat-like wings, rushed by with a scream, pursued by a great, ugly thing like the dragon of fable. The latter had huge teeth which it kept gnashing. A pterodactyl, I cried, and H.J.L. nodded. The jungle on our left parted, and a huge creature standing on its back legs, with a great lizard head, peered out hungrily. As soon as it saw us it dashed forward, and both R.L.W. and I felt rather frightened, but H.J.L. made a movement as if striking or throwing something at it, and cried out angrily, "Go, or I shall kill you." Immediately it vanished amid the jungle. Slowly on we passed, and in due course reached more solid ground. After passing for some time among tall grasses we came to a rocky valley, and in due course this debouched into a level plain. And so, through limitless plains, over mountains and valleys, skirting lakes and fording rivers, we journey. We passed in time through various ages of the earth's geological history, till all sense of time was lost. At length we entered another plain. Very different was this, however, from those we had previously crossed. Here were short tussocks of grass, powdered over with snow, and here and there frozen puddles. Further off were large expanses of frozen marsh and lake. In the distance was a frozen river, and across it moved a herd of mammoths. Nearer to us were reindeer feeding, and I could see a pack of wolves lurking among some boulders a short way out in the plain. As we were crossing this plain, a band of skin-clad savages suddenly sprang out from among some boulders where they had been hiding and rushed at us. H.J.L. at once called out to Rex, "Remember what happened last time we were attacked by these savages." Rex called out, "Charge," and we went for them as hard as we could, but they did not wait for us to reach them, but fled screaming. Their screams startled some reindeer who, in their turn, stampeded. We seemed to journey on over this vast frozen marsh for an age, and came at length to more mountains, and amid these sat down for a while. "Here you will have to leave us," said H.J.L. "We shall press on though. The civilized bells towards modem times, but you must now return to Earth. J.W., what will be your next plan of action?" "H.J.L., now that Rex's shattered astral nerves have recovered, we are returning, step by step, to present-day conditions. There he must learn to root out earthly passions and strive to do good, so that he may progress, and above all, that his spirit may develop, lest, when the time comes for him to leave this plane, he finds that he is but an immature spiritual body." "J.W., just one little point which puzzles me. Why was that Roman centurion who stopped us clad in civilian dress and not in the robes of a Roman soldier?" "H.J.L. I can't tell you, my boy, but, after all, why shouldn't he be? I have seen lots of British officers in civilian attire. Perhaps he had so dressed before he died. Perhaps he preferred that costume here." "No, you are not going to lead me into a discussion as to whether a centurion corresponds with a sergeant or a sub-lieutenant. It's time you were getting back. Goodbye." So I began to will that hell should return, and clouds enveloped me. The astral plane vanished, and I rushed through space at a tremendous speed till I reached my sleeping body and entering it, awoke on Earth. Chapter 7, R.L.W. describes his death. June 9, 1916. I found Rex in what looked rather like a French house on a street. It had nothing very striking about it, being such as one sees in Belgium or North France. It had a garden at the back surrounded by a wall, and the front of the house came practically straight on to the street. Inside, the furniture was modern and, though not ugly nor in bad taste, was not very interesting. There were pictures on the walls, including one or two paintings of scenes in Bruges which interested me, and several large photographs of groups, which did not. Rex and H.J.L. were seated on either side of a table when I entered. "J.W., do you know that your adjutant fell in battle about 3 weeks after you did?" RLW no. I say, don't you think we could get hold of him? He was rather a decent sort, and I know how rotten one feels when one comes over here, at first, anyway. HJL yes, Rex, we will. I think that it is the work we've been waiting for, but I think you ought to get in touch with the officer. He knows these spheres so much better than I, and has already done a good deal of useful work here since the war began. J. W. Rex, can you give me a coherent and connected account yet of your life and adventures here? RLW well, we had been shelled for some time, and gradually the bombardment increased in intensity. Then, as you know, they battered in the trenches near us on either side, and finally rushed them. However, we drove them back, and barricaded the ends of our trenches. Then the Boche seemed to get mad, and rained heavy stuff on us. I don't know how long this went on, but our parapets went all to pieces. Suddenly I felt an awful blow and seemed to be falling, falling, falling. I found myself in utter darkness, and my first thought was that the dugout had been blown in and I was entombed alive. I found, however, that I could move about and soon realized that there was something strange in the matter, for I seemed to be able to go about much further than I could have in a dugout. It did not occur to me that I was dead, but I felt dazed and as if everything around me were unreal. I thought, perhaps I was wounded and felt all over my body, but could find no damage. All the while I heard the roar and crash of the guns. I groped around and then began to call. No one came. I thought, of course, they can't get here during the bombardment, they will have to wait till it's over. Then I thought I'll have a smoke, but somehow, could not find my things. All the while I felt strangely dazed. Time seemed to drag slowly along. By degrees I began to distinguish new sounds and to perceive things in the darkness. I heard voices, and called, but got no answer. Then I distinctly heard German spoken, and kept jolly quiet. I thought perhaps the trenches had been taken at last. Soon I heard a savage shout, and it was in English. Then a whirling mass of struggling men, dark and shadowy, swept past me. Then more and more. To and fro the conflict rolled. Next moment the tide of battle rolled up and engulfed me. I fired my revolver Fusil into the face of a German, but it seemed to make not the slightest difference. A Boche drove his bayonet into my chest and I felt the pain for a moment, but still went on fighting, and forgot all about it. I seized a man by the throat and he seized me, and we rolled to the ground together, and were separated by the press of the battle. To and fro, up and down in a nightmare struggle, neither side gaining the upper band, we fought and battled and raged. Age after age, time had no meaning to us. There was nothing even consecutive. Ever and ever doing the same thing. Overhead lightning played and thunder tolled, blended with the flash and roar of the guns. Around us pitch night, moonless and starless, like a fog it encompassed us, weighed us down and shut us in. Amid this ceaseless strife I heard, afar off, the words of the burial service, and the sound of spades digging, digging, digging. But it had no meaning for me. Only I knew I was dreadfully weary of the ceaseless struggle which seemed to lead nowhere, which appeared to have no result, and I longed to shake off the dazed sensation which made everything appear unreal. At last I cried to a Boche, "Why the devil don't you die? I've shot you dead 3 times. And he laughed, and though he spoke in German I know, yet I understood his words as if they had been in English. "You fool! How can I? Don't you yet realize that we are all dead here? Yes, and are in hell, and forever must go on fighting without rest, forever and ever, lies," I answered. He sprang towards me and drove his bayonet clean through my body. "If you're alive, why don't you die now?" he asked, and I knew he spoke the truth. So I burst through the mob, and tried to find some place where I could sit down and rest and think things over. But though I wandered through the murky air for ages and tried spot after spot, it was no use. Wherever I sat came crowds of straggling spirits, and I was caught up in the conflict. At length, however, I found a stony knoll and sat down there, and suddenly heard you, J. W., calling, and I followed your voice through the black night. Then I saw you faintly in a familiar room and heard you ask me for a sign, and after struggling desperately for a time, seemed to write something.